Hi, I'm Moshe Zeldman. Welcome to Schmoozing. We live in times of unprecedented change and confusion. The rise of cancel culture, the promises and the threats of artificial intelligence, identity politics. We live in a society where people are more digitally connected but are feeling lonelier than ever, and we're in a world that seems to be edging towards World War III. I believe that Judaism can shed light on all these issues. Schmoozing is more than a podcast. It's a community of thoughtful voices on today's important topics. I invite you to explore with me how Judaism can help us deepen our understanding of the times we live in, confront the challenges we face, and bring some light into this world.
Welcome to episode 12, Three Reasons Why God Matters. So we've been talking a lot about truth, reality, the tools we have to figure out reality, the obstacles, the social conditioning, emotional biases, the whole idea of a post-truth world where there is no absolute truth. So once we're willing to try and be in alignment with reality, what's the most important aspect of reality that we've got to figure out? What do we need to know the most? Should I vote Republican or Democrat? What's the best way to diet? How do you know if you're really in love? Who was on Jeffrey Epstein's plane to his private island? Imagine you could meet the wisest person in the world who actually has the true, real grasp of reality with the deepest understanding. And you can ask them one question. What would that question be? So I've asked many people this. And I almost always get one of two answers. Either people ask the question, what's the meaning of life? Or people ask, is there a God? And what I will usually say is they're both the same question. Because if there is no God, then when you ask the question, what's the purpose of life? There is no purpose to life. It just is what it is. If a crazy man came in the room and took a bunch of paint and just splashed it on the wall, it would be a waste of time for you to look at it and try and ponder the deeper meaning of the pattern that underlies this work of art. There is no pattern. There is no work of art. It's just random splashes of paint. If a life evolved from nothing to something with no purpose and no cause and no creator, then all this world is one big bunch of molecules. You can't ask what the purpose is if there was nobody that created it that gave it a purpose. But today's episode is going to be three reasons why God matters. So there are three caveats we have to look at first. The first is that we are not here to prove God's existence. Yes, there is the idea of proof. Judaism doesn't believe that the idea of God is a leap of faith you're just supposed to blindly accept. We do believe there's logical, rational, compelling evidence. We're not going to get to it right now. The way that God introduces himself to the Jewish people is in the Ten Commandments. And the first commandment is, I am the Lord who took you out of the land of Egypt. That commandment is not saying that God created the heavens and the earth. The commandment is saying God cares. God is involved in history. God punishes the bad guys and rewards the good guys. There's a purpose and a direction to history. So yes, God created everything, but he's also involved and he also cares. That's the definition of God that I want to bring into this conversation today about why should it matter to me. The second caveat is we're not looking for ways in which believing in God is going to be comforting. I don't want to tell you, you better believe in God because then life just makes more sense. We're asking the much more objective question, if there is a God, how does that impact life? If there isn't a God, how does that impact life? I myself returned to Judaism in my 20s. And I remember when I went through this process of becoming an observant Jew, I would have friends who would say to me, it's psychological. You're looking for something to believe in. It makes you feel better about life. You feel like there's an afterlife. You feel like there's some ultimate justice in the world. That perfectly explains why you decided to turn to religion. And my response was always, I could explain the exact same thing of why you've decided not to return to religion. As much as there are psychological reasons that make it nicer to believe in God, there's certainly at least as many psychological reasons to not want to believe in God. If there is a God, yeah, life has a meaning, life has a purpose, there's an afterlife, there's some sort of an ultimate justice. If there is no God, I can do whatever I want. There's no ultimate rules. As long as I can get away with it and my conscience doesn't bother me, I can do whatever feels good to me. There's no accountability. There's no responsibility. There's no afterlife to worry about. Just live life and enjoy yourself. So as much as there are psychological reasons to drive a person to believe in God, there are certainly psychological reasons to drive a person not to believe in God or to stop believing in God. As Karl Marx famously said, religion is the opiate of the masses. If you get people to be religious, they'll be more docile, they'll believe in some afterlife, they'll have a more Pollyanna view of the world and not get troubled by the injustice and the suffering of the world. But that's not actually true. You don't find that religious people take their responsibilities in this world less seriously. You often find that many of the humanitarian projects and movements and social organizations in the world are organizations started by religious people, whether they're Jewish or Christian or otherwise. Being religious gives you a sense of responsibility, that God put me here for a purpose. So my life isn't about waiting for some afterlife. My life is about taking my time in this world to do the things that I think God put me here for. The third caveat is that we're not talking here about being observant. We're talking about being religious. What's the difference? An observant person, let's say an observant Jew, is somebody who says, I observe the commandments. I follow the 613 commandments in the Torah. I observe them. I'm an observant Jew. Religious means I take God seriously in my life. I have a relationship with God. A person can be observant without being religious. They follow all the laws. Do they have a spiritual sense of life? Do they have an actual relationship with God? Not necessarily. There are people that are religious and not observant. They have God in their lives. They take God seriously. They wrestle with the question of God in their lives. But they don't follow commandments. They don't follow any rule books. They don't follow any kind of a code. But they deeply believe that God is in their lives. So today we're talking about the idea of religion, not the idea of observance. In what way is my life different if I believe that God is actually involved in my life? So three reasons why God matters. Reason number one, the meaning of life. If there is no God, then existence is here because of a cosmic Big Bang, just pure physics, and we as human beings are here because of evolution. Millions of years of random genetic mutations has brought us here. There is no ultimate purpose. Let's listen to one of the leading proponents of atheism and evolutionary biology in the world, Professor Richard Dawkins, talking to a group of high school students in England.
And how does evolution, put into the meaning of life? What is the meaning of life if you're...
What's the meaning of life in, on an evolutionary worldview? One thing to say is that the universe doesn't owe us any meaning. It could be that there is no meaning of life. And if so, that would be just tough. I don't think that, because I think that we can all make the, whatever meaning we choose to make. And you, each of you, will have plenty of meanings in your own life. You'll be enthusiastic about some things. Maybe some sport you play, maybe some books you read, maybe your love life, maybe your family life. Maybe some of you love nature, some of you love music. These are all individual meanings that you can give to your life. That doesn't mean that life itself has one special meaning. It doesn't mean that we are here for any particular purpose, any more than mountains are here for a purpose or rocks are here for a purpose. Rocks are just here. Rocks just happen. They are here. Mountains just happen. They are here. There is a sense in which life is just here. Life came about through the evolutionary process. But after billions of years of evolution, life forms arose that had big brains, big nervous systems, and we've got the biggest brains of all for our size. And so our brains are capable of developing purposes of our own. We, with our big brains, can think of our own purposes. We can aim at things in life. We can have a grand design for the whole of our life, which is the privilege that we enjoy because our brains are so big. And the reason our brains are so big is that evolution gave us big brains. Over a very, very long period of time, the brains of our ancestors got gradually bigger and bigger and bigger until they eventually became so big that they're now capable of enjoying music and poetry and mathematics and love and all the things that give our lives meaning and give our lives our own individual purpose.
So as Professor Dawkins says, you can make whatever meaning you choose to make. You're not here for a purpose. You're just an advanced rock. So I understand that there are questions in life where there's no wrong answer. When somebody says to you, are you a dog person or a cat person? Either you're a dog person or you're a cat person or you're both or you're neither. Why? It's just who I am. But there are other kinds of questions where there's a right and a wrong answer. When you're doing a crossword puzzle and clue number 44 is an actor whose last name is DiCaprio, the answer is Leonardo. There is no other answer. Professor Dawkins is not going to say, well, find an answer that works for you. There is no right answer. Everyone has to just find their own answer. Kind of sounds like the whole post-truth thing. So if there is no God, yeah, there's no right answer. The answer is whatever you make it. When we're young, we like collecting baseball cards because we want to finish the collection. It makes us feel accomplished. Does it actually have any meaning? Yeah, for a 9-year-old, it has a lot of meaning. But then we grow up and we decide what we're going to do with our lives. So if it's completely subjective and there's no right and wrong, then the only difference between spending 18 hours a day on Wall Street making money versus 18 hours a day of fighting against injustice and trying to improve the world around you versus 18 hours a day of training for a hot dog eating contest so you can win the prize of the greatest hot dog eater in all of Florida for the third year in a row, that's your choice. It's all the same. None of it really matters. The other problem with Richard Dawkins' argument is that as much as our brains have evolved to the point where we can perceive beauty and art and meaning, those same brains also allow us to feel depressed, like when we find out we're just a rock, or to feel bitter or despondent or angry. There's a lot of injustice in the world. There's a lot of pain in the world. We feel all of that pain for the same reason we feel that pleasure. As much as a mouse doesn't have a feeling of falling in love, a mouse also doesn't have a feeling of being depressed that his girlfriend decided to hook up with some other mouse. There's a lot of real suffering in life. We all face it, and we all have those moments in life where we say, I just don't want to get out of bed. Why continue with life? What's the purpose? If you don't feel that undercurrent of pain and horror that exists in the world, you're either a psychopath, or you don't watch the news, or you haven't been to enough funerals yet. As the famous philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche said, he who has a why to live for can bear almost anyhow. There's a famous psychiatrist, Dr. Viktor Frankl, who was actually an inmate in the Auschwitz labor camp during the Holocaust. He wrote a famous book called Man's Search for Meaning. He observed that the prisoners who survived, who found a way to endure, always had a greater purpose that carried them onward through difficult conditions. For some, it was a child who was sheltered away in some distant country, who was waiting for them upon liberation. For others, it was a spouse or a family member. For others, it was an unfinished task or a creative work that required their unique contribution. So Frankl and his friends were constantly on the lookout for fellow prisoners who had lost their purpose. Frankl says, the prisoner who had lost faith in the future, his future, was doomed. With his loss of belief in the future, he also lost his spiritual hold. He let himself decline and became subject to mental and physical decay. We all feel that there's some reason I'm here. There's a purpose to my life. I'm here to accomplish something. So either that's real, if there is a God, or it's completely fabricated and subjective and has no real meaning if there isn't. I'll leave it to Dr. Jordan Peterson, who expressed this idea beautifully.
I'm not an atheist anymore because I don't look at the world that way anymore. I'm not a materialist anymore. I don't think the world's made out of matter. I think it's made out of what matters. It's made out of meaning. What we orient towards unconsciously, which means what captures our attention, is meaning, and it captures our attention before we know what it is. The brain acts as if the world's made out of information or made out of meaning.
If you were capable of believing, it would be a transfiguring event, a truly transfiguring event. And I know people experience that to one degree or another, but we have no idea what the limit of that is. And we have no idea what the possibility is within each person, if they lived a life that was maximally courageous and maximally truthful, you know, because maybe you're running at 60% or 70% or 20% and at cross purposes to yourself. God only knows what you'd be if you believed.
So again, this isn't a proof that life has some transcendent meaning. It is a consequence of believing in God. If there is a God, there's a reason why God created us. There's a reason why I exist. There's a reason why you exist. If there is no God, this whole talk about the meaning and purpose of life is completely arbitrary. The second reason why God matters is on the deep philosophical question of free will. So this is a related idea, but it's coming from a bit of a different angle. There's, of course, the famous question, if God created the world and God is in control and God is beyond time, he knows what we're going to do. How do we have free will? Good question. We're going to save it for another time. What I would say on the flip side, though, is if there is a God, it leaves room for the idea that we have free will. If there is no God, then we don't. I remember when I was studying artificial intelligence way back when at the University of Toronto, our professor came in one day and did a demonstration. He took a pencil. He said, what's going to happen when I let go of this pencil? So we all said, it's going to drop. So sure enough, it dropped. He said, why did the pencil drop? Does the pencil like dropping? Did the pencil want to drop? Did the pencil choose to drop? No, it's called gravity. It's just the law of nature. He said, okay, what if I take a plant and I put it in the middle of a room where there's only sunlight coming in from one side of the room? As the plant grows, it's going to grow towards the sunlight. Why? Does the plant decide to get sunlight? Does the plant like sunlight? No, it's a simple biochemical mechanism that builds the walls of the plant cells in a way that they grow and incline towards the light. It's a purely chemical reaction. Not that different than the pencil dropping. More sophisticated, but essentially the same. The professor then said, okay, what if I see an ant crawling across the floor and I put a little bit of sugar on one side of the ant? The ant will go towards the sugar. Does the ant like sugar? Does the ant choose sugar? No. Ants are wired chemically to respond to the smell of sugar and to go after sugar and bring it back to the ant colony for the same reason the plant goes towards the sunlight. The professor said, okay, fourth example. I walk towards my neighbor's house. The dog is outside in the yard and the dog starts barking. Why is the dog barking? Is the dog barking because it likes scaring people off? Is the dog barking because it chose at this moment it wants to be a dog that's going to be angry? Dogs are much more sophisticated animals. They've got a much more evolved brain. They have emotions, there's hormones, there's instincts, there's a variety of factors. But at the end of the day, when the dog barks, it's because the dog is just as programmed to bark as the ant is programmed to get the sugar, as the plant is programmed to go towards the sunlight, as the pencil is programmed to drop according to the laws of gravity. What was the professor's conclusion, of course? How do we know we have free will? When you decide to go to university, or your friend decides to drop out of university, you decide to become a lawyer, your friend decides to become a real estate agent, you find yourself attracted to a certain kind of person, whereas your friend finds themselves attracted to a different kind of person. You have a certain sense of humor, you have certain likes and dislikes, you have a certain genetic disposition. How much of that is in your control? Maybe we are just as reactive to the environment around us the same way the dog or the ant or the plant or the pencil is reacting to its environment. How do we know we're responsible for our choice? So if you remove God from the picture and you look at a human being and say, all we are is a complicated chemical machine. We are a blob of cells that follow laws of nature, the same laws of nature that apply to everything else in this world. My brain is made of cells. My body is made of cells. My emotions are driven by my brain cells. And all of that is just reacting to the environment around me all the time. Where is there room for choice? Yes, understanding free will in a world where there's a God is a complicated topic. The rabbis spend a lot of time talking about it. We're going to get to it. Understanding free will without God, we're just machines. There's no real free will. There's no real consciousness. Whatever feeling of choice we have, whatever feeling of consciousness we have, is just illusory. We're not responsible for anything. I was once giving a class in Australia to a room full of scientists, and I made a point in the class, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I said something like, you can choose to see it this way or you can choose to see it that way. Anyway, a scientist puts up his hand. It turns out he was a microbiologist. The scientist puts up his hand and he says, excuse me, are you implying that we have free choice? I said, yes, it's not really our topic tonight, but yes, I believe we have free will. We have choice. He said, well, I don't believe that at all. I'm a biologist. I think you can reduce all human choices to biological mechanisms. We're not really making choices. So I said to him, this is in front of a room of about 100 scientists. And I said to him, well, you did choose to put up your hand and ask me a question. He said, no, I didn't. I was sitting here, said something that caused a reaction in my brain, which caused a chemical reaction, which led to me raising my hand to ask you the question. I said, well, right now, as we're having this conversation, you are choosing how to respond to me, aren't you? And he said literally this. He said, no, as these words are coming out of my mouth, I'm not controlling which word is going to come next. It totally depends on the circumstances around me, my chemicals, my emotions, the peer pressure of the room, what you say, what that provokes in me. All of that makes me say the next words I'm going to say. So I looked at him and I was stunned. Like, I don't know what to do with this guy. So what I did was I shrugged my shoulders and I said, okay, any other questions? So he got very irritated and he says, excuse me, Rabbi, you didn't answer my question. I said to him, you're not really here. You're basically a robot. I don't argue with robots. Okay, so the whole room was laughing at that point. He came to me after the class and he confronted me in front of a whole group of people and said, Rabbi, you never proved your point. You never proved the point that we have free will. And I said, you're right. I'm not sure there is empirical evidence that we have free will. But just think about how absurd life actually would be if we don't. You're not responsible for anything. You're not accountable for anything. There's nothing to ever feel good about. There's nothing to ever feel bad about. There's no moral structure to this world. Your life is just, you're a ball in a pinball machine being bounced around. Relationships and finances and weather and politics and tenure and ego and whatever else life throws at you, you just bounce around from one thing to the next. It's not a proof that we have free will, but it shows us that if there's no God and all we are pure material physical beings, then life becomes absurd. So I think the issue really comes down to this. We can't prove that we have free will, but let's imagine when you make a bad choice, there's for sure a voice in you that says, I shouldn't have done that. I could have acted more responsibly. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have eaten that. I shouldn't have done that. And then you also have another voice in you that says, it's not your responsibility. It was the heat of the moment. You did the best you could. Could have been worse. It's just your nature. I think all of us intuitively know that as much as there's that voice that wants to deny us responsibility for our actions and our choices, the voice that says, stop playing games. There's that voice that denies responsibility. There's the deeper voice that's calling you on it and saying, you know, you're not living in reality. You know, you could have made a better choice. The third reason why God matters, where God intersects with real life, is on the question of morality. According to Professor Dawkins, we're all just a bunch of animals. So we know that in the animal world, there is no morality. When a cat attacks a bird and eats it, he's not being a bad cat. That's what cats do. So why should it be any different when somebody murders? So this topic of God and morality is really a whole topic unto itself, and we're going to spend some more time exploring it. But in the meantime, just to give you a thought exercise, imagine a friend of yours told you very proudly that they just scammed some elderly person out of their whole savings in their bank. So you look at them horrified and say, that's terrible. You're such a lowlife. Why would you do that? And they shrug their shoulders and say, well, why not? It was an easy thing to do. I'm never going to get caught. You would do the same thing if you were in my shoes. And you say, no, of course I would never do that. Robbed an innocent person of all their life savings? I would never do that. And they look at you kind of funny and say, well, why not? And you say, because it's wrong. And they say, wrong? Who says it's wrong? Who decides right and wrong? You don't feel like doing it. It bothers you. It makes you uncomfortable. Okay, so I get it. Don't do it. But who are you to judge me and tell me that what I'm doing is wrong? Yes, society says it's wrong. Okay, society also says I have to wear a seatbelt or I'm going to get a fine. I don't want to wear a seatbelt, that's my business. Society says you can't steal innocent people's money. If I do it and I get away with it, what's it anybody's business? Yeah, I'm hurting somebody. What's wrong with hurting people? So if you really follow that question to its moral conclusion, you'll come to a pretty shocking realization that there's no actual proof, certainly not scientific, but even logically, there's no actual proof that hurting an innocent human being is actually wrong. Because again, in a world of materialism, in a world that's governed purely by the laws of physics and biology and the laws of nature, what's wrong with anything? What scientific equation will tell me that something is evil? What law of physics will tell me that something is actually wrong? So yes, I might feel guilty, but what is guilt? It's just an emotion. It's a feeling. I can overcome my feelings. If I decide to go on a diet, I have a feeling that I want to eat a piece of cake. I can override that feeling and not eat the cake. I want to steal money from somebody. I have this guilt feeling that was given to me by my parents, by the Western world, by my upbringing. Why is overcoming that feeling any more unjustified than overcoming the feeling of wanting to eat a piece of cake? If morality is just feelings, then there's nothing really wrong with anything. So again, in a world where there's a God, there is an ultimate source of authority of right and wrong. There are things that are really right. There are things that are really wrong. We can argue with a radical Muslim, is his view of the world right or is our view of the world right? We can argue with a Nazi, is his view of the world correct or is our view of the world correct? But at the end of the day, both you and I and the radical Muslim and the Nazi have one thing in common. We know there is a right and wrong. Now the only debate is who's right and who's wrong. But in a world of actual atheism, there's nothing wrong with anything. You feel the right thing to do is to fly planes into buildings and kill thousands of people? Do it. You want to help an elderly person cross the street? Do that. Everyone gets to make up their own morality in life, just like everybody gets to make up their own meaning in life. So there are three reasons why God matters. If there's a God, life has meaning. You have free will, and there is a real right and wrong. If there is no God, if this world is all just a collection of molecules, there is no ultimate meaning. You don't really have any choices in life, and there's nothing really wrong with anything. None of these are proofs that God exists. All they are proofs that the question of God's existence is clearly the most important question in life. I'm okay with a person who says, I've thought about it, I've investigated it, I've come to the conclusion there is no God. So yeah, there's no real purpose to life. So yeah, I'm just a floating bag of chemicals. There's no real purpose to life. My choices don't really matter because I'm not really making them, not responsible for anything that happened. And I'm not really responsible for anything that I do. And I can't take credit or blame for anything that I do. And yeah, there is no good or evil. Nothing really matters. What disturbs me is the person who says, who cares? What disturbs me is the person who says, the question of God? Whatever, what's for dinner? The question of God's existence is the single most important question in life because it gives an entire context to the construct of life. What fascinates me is people like Professor Dawkins, who say there is no ultimate purpose in life, so I'm making it my purpose in life to go around the world convincing people that there is no purpose of life. Something worth thinking about. Thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, and also leave feedback if you liked the content, and especially if you didn't. These are important conversations, so let's keep schmoozing.